Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
I mean, my goodness. Sheldon, thank you so much for being here with us this evening.
Thank you.
Welcome. We are laughing because Leroy, we had to literally kick him out of the studio.
I know, he wanted some of my shine.
And I'm sure we had to ask him to leave.
Yeah.
But maybe he shouldn't leave. You might just Somerset.
Yeah, do a collab. A three-way.
Maybe Mr. Somerset, you know, because it's always fun having... Hello, how are you?
I'm fine, and you?
Okay, so what are we doing today?
So today we're doing cover versions.
Ah.
And you know, like, you know, people love doing cover versions, but I don't see the point of doing a cover version. There's an art to doing a cover version.
Yeah.
Like, you've got to do certain things. Like, for example, people love covering... Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah. I'm so sick and tired of that song. It's been done by so many people, and everyone thinks that they're adding some new spice to it.
Mm-hmm.
Meantime, it didn't require any additional spice. The song was what it was at the beginning, and you should just leave it alone. So I've come up with a few rules that I think make for a good cover version.
Mm.
So number one, you need to reinterpret the song. You can't do a cover version the way it was originally done.
Yeah.
Because then it's a
cop-out.
What's the point? You're not adding anything new to it. You've got to add your own flavor. So if you, let's say, are doing a folk song like Roberta Flack, she's the queen of taking a folk song and then converting it into something new and fresh. Mm. She adds her own flavor to it. Choose something that hasn't been done to death. Because people tend to do this thing where they cover a song that's like been done many times, like Hallelujah, yeah, or The Prayer by Celine Dion and Andrea Bocelli, or like one of the popular songs that artist, that they've got, like artists have got vast repertoires.
Mm.
And you need to explore like things that people ordinarily wouldn't know. The main reason for that is if you do a lesser known song, it means that you can own it more easily than doing a song that's been covered many times,
yeah,
and now you've got to compete with all the cover versions that came before it. The other thing is you need to work with producers and musicians that understand what your vision are.
Mm.
Like, you can't just like spook and pluck or just get like just any old person to come and do the production with you. Keep it simple.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that like sometimes some artists love to over embellish and overdo it and add too many riffs and too many runs in the music, and it sort of loses its impact. And Berry Gordy,
yeah,
from Motown always said, keep it simple, stupid, yeah, kids. Like, don't overthink it. Just make it genuine and honest. Elevate the cover version. Take it to a new level. Have an emotional connection to the song. So if you're going to do a cover version, Aretha Franklin always said she wouldn't do a song that she didn't believe in.
She didn't connect with you.
Yes. If she didn't believe in it, she wasn't doing it. So have a connection to the song. Have an angle as well. Like, what is your interpretation? What, like, for example, with I Will Always Love You by Whitney Houston, they decided they were going to start with an a cappella part first, before getting into the music, which was unusual at the time.
Mm.
People didn't do that kind of thing. And it completely differentiated the Dolly Parton version from the Whitney Houston version.
Mm.
Don't follow trends. What I've been realizing recently is people just follow whatever's the hottest thing. They want to just cut and paste and make more of that. And that's just not genuine, and the audience can see right through it.
Yeah.
And the last thing is, consider the audience. Consider the audience that you're speaking to and the way you are covering the song, because you don't want it to come across as it's like a fake attempt at a song. Now, the song we just heard was Sinead O'Connor doing Nothing Compares to You. Now, this song was originally written by Prince. Prince had recorded the song in 1984, and he released it on because Prince was a prolific musician. He not only had his own content that he was doing, but and then he'd have like bands like The Time, he'd have the New Power Generation, he'd have The Revolution, he had like girl bands on the side. He had like a whole lot of artists for whom he wrote music, and he'd write, produce, play all the instruments. He got fully involved. And I think the reason for that was because Prince was such a musical genius that he felt that, like, the Prince brand was limiting for him. Mm. He needed to be able to explore his musical virtuosity by exploring different levels of music, different artists, different men, women, the whole spiel. Like, he was trying different things all the time. So he had a band called The Family, and he wrote this song in 1984 and then released it on the album. And the song was like a bit of a non-song. Nothing was going on with it. And then in 1990, Sinead O'Connor decided that she was going to cover this song. She was signed to Warner Brothers. Prince was signed to Warner Brothers. Warner Brothers owned the Prince content, and they said, do this song. And she covered the song, and it was a huge hit for her. It went to number one in the United States and in the UK, 3.5 million units. It went to number one in 14 other countries. An interesting fact is that this guy called Gota Yashiki was the arranger of the song. And Gota Yashiki was one of the members of Simply Red. So Simply Red was two members, Mick Hucknall and Gota Yashiki. And he did the arrangement of the song. And if you listen to the Prince version versus this version, they sound completely different. And that's the genius of this cover version, is that she fully embraced this song and converted it into something that no one would even know the Prince version, because it's so vastly different, and she owned the song.
All right.
Kaya.
959.
You probably have to be 40, 45 plus. Tandy's laughing at us. You'd have to be 45 plus to get this. And yeah.
Yeah, plus with
down
that.
Memory. Plus with that. Yeah. Down memory.
You're 15%, not 15.5.
Yeah. So what color was her hair here?
Orange.
Did you and see? Purple.
Yeah. And you'd have to be 50 or 60 plus to identify the first one.
Yeah.
You may have been exposed. You may be in the 40s though.
No, but late 40s.
You could be in your 40s as well.
No. You are pushing 40, almost 50. That's the youngest listener.
Yeah, no, you're right. So the Joe Cocker song is considered by BBC one of the greatest cover versions of all time. The original was recorded in 1967 and was written by Paul McCartney and John Lennon. It was a Beatles song. But it was like a bit of a... Like it was never a hit for the Beatles. And the Beatles are one of my all-time favorite bands. Anyway, in 1968, Joe Cocker, a year after the song was written, decided that he was going to release the song on his debut album. And the album was titled With a Little Help from My Friends. And when he was recording it, he was inspired by a lot of the rock bands of the 1960s in the UK were highly, highly influenced by blues and soul music. The Beatles were, the Rolling Stones were, the Who were, Led Zeppelin was highly inspired, Eric Clapton, they were all inspired by blues. And Joe Cocker was heavily inspired by Aretha Franklin and Ray Charles. And so he wanted to do like a soul version of With a Little Help from My Friends. And he recorded this song. And when he finished recording it, he took it to Paul McCartney so he could have a listen to it. And Paul McCartney was like, this is mind-blowing. We couldn't have ever done it like this.
Mm.
And he was like completely blown away by this Joe Cocker version of With a Little Help from My Friends. The song was then performed in 1969 at the Woodstock Festival, and it made Joe Cocker international superstar. In 1988, that's why there might be some 40-year-olds that know the song. The song was used as the theme song for a brilliant television series called The Wonder Years.
Of course.
Yeah. And that is how I came to learn of the song. And the version by Joe Cocker is the seminal version, although the Beatles had previously recorded and released the song. Then Cyndi Lauper, did you watch that documentary about the making of We Are the World?
don't know if I watched the documentary, but there was a lot of, there were a lot of many little things happening around what was happening behind the scenes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there was a little bit of beef, ne?
Yeah, but so this was
is it Michael Jackson and her?
Not really. Well, it was about placements on the, but. Last year, there was a big documentary about We Are the World because it was the anniversary of the release of the song. And it was, I think it's on Netflix. It's a brilliant, brilliant documentary. Okay. But Cyndi Lauper, I don't know if you know, like, there was a big competition between Cyndi and Madonna in the 1980s like, who's going to be the one that makes it out? Who, and they love doing that with women artists specifically, like Brandy and Monica. And they always, Mariah and Whitney.
Yes.
And they always do this, like, take the two girls against each other and see, you know, who's going to be the one that makes it. Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera. Mm. There were just so many of those kind of stories. But anyway, so it was Madonna and Cyndi. But Madonna was, so what they did was, when they did We Are the World, when they recorded it, it was on the night of the American Music Awards, and Quincy Jones.
And it was about making sure they're all there at the same time.
At the same place.
In one place.
And so that's why Lionel Richie was hosting the American Music Awards that year, and so they sent out an invitation to all the people that were at the American Music Awards that night and asked them if they would, after the show, all pop off to go and record We Are the World after the show. So you can imagine.
Wow.
Show probably finished 9 o'clock. They all
tired.
Get to the studio, record. There was a lot of tension between the artists. Quincy Jones put a sign at the front of the studio saying, please leave your egos at the door. And they all got in.
Only
there.
He could do that.
Exactly. And Madonna was at the ceremony that night, but she wasn't invited because they were like, this girl can't sing. So we're not inviting her. So she was like one of the only people that wasn't invited that was at the American Music Awards that year. Cyndi was invited.
Yes.
And Prince was also invited. But Prince was like, hey,
I'm not singing.
I'm not going to be. So they were like, they kept on like, because they invited Sheila E. to come and record. But Sheila eventually picked up that the only reason why she was invited was because she knew Prince. And she was like the carrot that could drag Prince there.
In.
And so they kept on saying, where's Prince? And then she was like, I don't think he's coming.
I'm here, aren't I?
Exactly. And she was like, I don't think he's coming. And then they were like, no, you got to convince him to come. And he was like, he's not going to come and sing with all these people here. It's just too much for him. Anyway, so Prince never landed up pitching up. And Cyndi was recording on that night. She had a very important part in the song. And they were like, why is it that every time that Cyndi records, there's a weird sound in the background? And they couldn't figure out like what was wrong. And then they realized that she had all of this jewelry on, and her jewelry was clanking and making a noise with the microphone. So they were like, it's your jewelry, you need to take it all off. So there's a whole scene where she's taking off all of this jewelry and these bracelets and earrings and necklaces off, because that was what she was known for, like all of this jewelry. And then she had to take it off because it was interfering with the microphone. But anyway, that song, Girls Just Want to Have Some, Girls Just Want to Have Fun, was her first hit. It was her first single release in 1983, and it went to number 2 in the United States and the UK, and it sold 8.6 million units. It was a massive hit for her. But the original version was recorded by a guy called Robert Hazard. He had recorded the song in 1979, and he was performing it at like local clubs, and he even got a little bit of radio airplay off of the song. And then this guy called Rick Chertoff, he was the producer on Girls Just Want to Have Fun. He was a friend of Robert Hazard. And he said to Cyndi, why don't you record the song? I think this would be a good song for you. Anyway, she records it, but she changes the... Because music is all about how you perceive it or what angle you're taking the song from. And she recorded it more as like a feminist anthem. Mm. And because of her spin on the song, it just blew up. Mm-hmm. Everyone just wanted to have... I mean, that song, if you were around in 1983, I was very young. I just want to put it out there. I was very young at that stage.
No comment.
That song was everywhere. Everyone was jamming to this to this track. It was eventually nominated for Record of the Year and Best Female Pop Vocal Performance, but didn't win either one of those.
Run that back.
On the street.
On the air.
And online at kaya959.co.za.
Run. Leona Lewis. Mm-hmm. Who had sung this before?
So, the original version of this song was done by a band called Snow Patrol. So the original version was released in 2004, and the song was written by the lead singer Gary Lightbody, and apparently it was inspired by he'd been out drinking heavily the one night, and he was drinking so heavily that he fell down some stairs.
Yo.
At the bar that he was drinking at. And they found him at the bottom with a cut face and the whole spiel. And and it inspired him to write this. As only one can write a song when you're that drunk. And so they released Snow Patrol. They were the British, like, rock, independent rock band. And it's considered a Brit pop power ballad. And then Leona Lewis recorded a version of the song in 2008 for her debut album, Spirit, but for the deluxe edition of the album. So how deluxe editions work is, like, back in the day when people were buying albums, they would release, like, a version of the album, the original version of the album. And if there were, like, a few hits off the album and there was, like, some longevity in the album, what they would do is to try and, like, stimulate additional sales, is they would release a deluxe edition with, like, some, like, a few more extra songs in it just to, like, push up the sales of the album. And so this song was included in the deluxe edition of the album. She had she had performed the song on a BBC television show called Live Lounge. And the concept behind the show was that they would invite celebrity singers on to the show and they would do two songs. One of their songs and a cover version. And she decided she was going to do this cover version. And when the song, when she performed it, the host of the show was like, this is so beautiful. Like, the interpret of the song is just so amazing. And there was tears in the audience. And they loved it so much that the next day there was 8,000 requests for that song to play.
Wow.
And so she recorded a version, released it, and it went to number one in the UK and number 81 in the United States and beat the original positioning of the Snow Patrol version, which went to number five in the United Kingdom and sold 635,000 units. Her version sold 2.5 million units.
Wow.
So she wiped up with the song. And if you listen to the original versus this, they're two completely different songs.
Like,
and the soul that she performs the song with is unbelievable. Now, the song before that,
Amy Winehouse.
So I was in England this past December, and I got to go and look at there's a bronze statue of Amy Winehouse in Camden, because that's where she came from. I was, like, so blown away by being in the presence.
What a waste of a life.
Total, like, amazing talent. And actually, there's a bronze as well in South Africa of Brenda Fassie.
Yes, it is. Yes.
In front of the Market Theatre.
Yes, downtown, yeah.
Guys, you've got, like, just visiting these sites is just so inspirational. And Amy Winehouse was an iconic musician, although she only released two albums, but that voice was just something else.
Man.
And so this song was originally recorded in 2006 by a band called the Zootons. And they were an indie rock band. They were inspired by gazing across the Mersey and looking at Paul McCartney's house. And they decided that they were going to write this song. And it was also in line with the story about the lead singer, Dave McCabe, who had a friend called Valerie Starr who'd been arrested for drinking under the influence. And they wrote this song called Valerie, right? Now, Amy Winehouse was asked to appear on a Mark Ronson album called Version. So Mark Ronson, a very famous producer, but he doesn't sing himself. So what he does is when he releases albums, same thing Quincy Jones used to do, is he'll write a whole lot of songs and do all the production on the album, but he'll bring guest vocalists on. And he invited Amy Winehouse to appear on the album. He also produced Amy Winehouse's Back to Black album. Anyway, and he said, we want to do like a soulful album, but it needs to be like modern cover versions. And she was like, I don't listen to anything newer than 1967. So like all my stuff is like old stuff. Like, and he was like, no, you got to do something modern, something fresh. Anyway, the year before that, which was 2006, this was 2007, she had heard this Zooton song and she was like, I think I can do something with this song. She releases the song and her version completely wipes out the original version. It went to number 2 in the UK and sold over 3.2 million units. So it was a massive hit for her, and it wasn't such a big hit for the Zootons, although it had it went to number 9 in the UK, the Zootons version, but no one remembers the Zootons and everyone remembers the Amy Winehouse version.
All right.
Kaya.
959.
Lenny Kravitz.
I love Lenny Kravitz.
We can see why.
Yo, I mean, 60 years old.
Why does he not age?
Have you seen his body?
Why does he not age?
It's unbelievable.
Nothing has aged.
He's perfect.
Nothing.
Like that, he looks like a Greek god. Like, the body is perfect.
Everything.
Like, the voice is on point. The music's still good. But, like, this
And he also hasn't stayed 80s or 90s.
Exactly. He's moved.
How does that look remain so current?
Yeah, because it was always like a very androgynous.
But I know,
like,
but like, how does...
And you know, I think Lenny Kravitz was always ahead of his time. Like, I think he there was something alien about him, even in the 90s,
yes,
when we got to know him.
Yes.
And I think he's still there, you know. But I mean, he's like Prince and like Michael and
Timeless.
Lenny Kravitz and all
Timeless.
Of them. I mean, Lenny Kravitz is a legend. This is 1998. And the original version was by a band called The Guess Who, a British band.
Mm.
And they released it in 1970, and it was a number one hit for them. And the song has got a very interesting origin. So they were on stage, and the guitarist had broken a string on his guitar and restrung and was busy tuning his guitar. And as he's tuning his guitar, he came up with this riff, and he was like, oh, this is quite cool, and started playing the riff. And then the rest of the guys joined in with him, and they just jammed this song, American Woman, right there on stage in front of everybody.
Wow.
And there was a kid who was recording, doing a bootleg recording,
because
that was really popular back in those days. And the guys of the band saw him doing it, and they were like, bring that recording here.
Yeah.
We want to hear it.
Yeah.
And then they used that recording to build the lyrics for the song, and they constructed that whole song based like on
amazing.
That performance that they did right there on stage.
Amazing.
Anyway, so Lenny Kravitz, in many years later, so that was number one in the United States, 1.1 million units sold. And then in 1998, Lenny Kravitz was asked to put a song on an Austin Powers soundtrack, The Spy Who Shagged Me, and he chose this song. And his version is much slower than the original version. So you can feel that swagger. And Lenny Kravitz is a phenomenal guitarist. So you can hear that guitar riffing in it. It wasn't as big as the original version, but because there was such a huge gap between the songs, 1998 versus 1970, so it's like 28 years later, almost 30 years later. My math's not very good, but I think it is 28 years. I didn't do well at math at school. I had to take standard grade. I had to drop down one level. I was too confident. I thought I could do core math. It didn't work out so nicely for me. Anyway, and so Lenny Kravitz's version was...
By the way, nobody knows what standard grade is here.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry.
What is it called now?
I think now it's called Mathlet.
Yes. That
anyway, I wasn't going to struggle through matric with core math. It was never going to happen for me. Anyway, so he released it in 1998, and although his version wasn't as big, it went only to number 49 in the United States, it did win the Grammy Award for Best Male Rock Vocal Performance in the year 2000. Anyway, so our last song is a song by Adele. Now, Adele's got a big thing. Adele's signature is the fact that she only does songs that she writes. So she's very, very reluctant to do cover versions. She doesn't like it. Her first big cover version was a Bob Dylan song called To Make You Feel My Love. And then she did this cover version, which is I Can't Make You Love Me, which has been covered by so many different artists. I mean, it's a very popular song. So it breaks the rule of don't do a song that has been recorded by many other people.
Yes.
But Adele's just...
Until you know, Adele.
Yeah. Or Whitney. So we're going to forgive Adele for this one, and we're going to end off with I Can't Make You Love Me.
Sheldon, well, always lovely. See you next week.
See you next week.
Thanks, folks. We'll be back on Monday at 8.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.